What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. How's everybody doing out there? I hope you're listening to this at the gym or maybe at work, doing something productive. Before we get started, I want to advise everybody, my show is available on Rockfin and Odyssey and Iconic and YouTube. Well, YouTube for as long as I'm on YouTube, I guess. And you can find this episode wherever podcasts are served. And I appreciate you guys tuning in every week. It really means a lot to me. Thank you so much. Spread the word. Share this episode. Share the channel. And also, by the way, if you can rate the show and you can write a little comment, and apparently the algorithms like that, I trigger people. I won't lie to you. There's some people in the comment section that have been fully triggered. So I feel like I'm doing my job if I can make these people freak out a little bit. Thank you to our sponsors, C60 Purple Power. They have been the best. I'm so glad Ken and I crossed paths and made this happen. What they're doing is they're making this product that's called C60. It is a naturally occurring molecule. It's comprised of 60 carbon atoms. It forms this thing that looks like a hollow soccer ball. In fact, go to c60purplepower.com, go to their website, and you can take a look and you'll see what I'm talking about. It's a spherical cage, and this structure makes C60 what they call a free radical sponge. So it kind of goes around your body, neutralizing free radicals, and then it resets itself again and again. So it just constantly does this. It's the most powerful antioxidant known. It's hundreds of times more powerful than anything out there on the market. It can help maximize the efficiency of cells in producing energy. It also may provide cellular protection against many toxic environmental factors. God knows we need that out there. Ken Schwartz is a nuclear physicist. That's how he came across it. And the guys that discovered C60 won the Nobel Prize for it. So it's kind of a big deal. And Ken decided he was going to start this company and make this product available to people worldwide. And they've done it. It's a small business. We like them. They're good to the show. They're cool people off air, by the way. They understand the fight that we're fighting. So they're definitely on our side. So if you're interested in something like this, you think it might help you out, well, just go to c60purplepower.com, check it out for yourself, see if it's right for you. And if it is, you can use the promo code MACRO to save yourself some money, and they have free shipping inside the continental United States. The product has not been approved by the FDA, but I'm not too concerned about that because we all know the FDA is just a racket that shakes people down for money. So I'm not too concerned about that. I've been taking it for the last couple of months. I feel great. My cat has been taking it for the last couple of months. She looks amazing. So I'm very happy there. And maybe it'll work for, you know, maybe you'll have the same results that I had. So check it out. And, you know, we had Michael Halpern on the show. a couple of weeks ago. Oh man, he came in and just brought the information on SPARS. You know, he was over at InfoWars, and he did his show, his episode that he did with Alex and Rob Dew, wound up getting 10 million views. I mean, people were sharing that like crazy. Even a suppressed channel like band.video and anything Alex Jones related still was viral. And I think it's because people were like, what is going on with this? How can it possibly be that they've got yet another scenario or simulation that's running years in advance, simulating things, and then we see massive similarities between the simulation and the real world rollout of this? And, you know, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to recognize similarities between the two. And so what I wanted to do was go into a little bit more detail with this, because we had Mike on and he did a great job, and he did as much as he could in the time that we had, but I want to go deeper. So what I've done is I've got the document, and I'm going to read a little bit from this. It's the SPARS pandemic 2025 to 2028. So what this is it's a simulation. It's a role playing exercise that they ran in 2017. Okay, that's an important date because it's obviously 3 years before COVID kicked off. And the people that did it, Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, Bloomberg School of Public Health. So nothing says honest and upfront like the name Bloomberg, right? I mean, what a scumbag he is. So anything that's connected to Bloomberg, you should be questioning. And then, of course, when it has Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, you go, oh, well, that's just a university hospital. They can't be up to no good, right? Well, yeah, they can. They were the ones in charge of the Guatemala syphilis experiment. You know, that lovely experiment where they gave a bunch of Guatemalan syphilis and then refused to treat them just to see how it would affect them. You know, that horrible idea. Yeah, Johns Hopkins was behind that, as well as Event 201. So here we go now. When we've got two different role-playing exercises involving Johns Hopkins that are simulating a pandemic that just so happens to kind of break out exactly the way they simulated it. So I'd say that you want to keep them on your radar. So let's get into this. I'm going to start with the scenario purpose, the reason for doing this. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through this document. It's a PDF. You can get it anywhere. I'll put a link to it in the description. It's 89 pages and you can read this stuff for yourself. But I want to go over, you know, for those of you that don't have the time or the interest in reading through this whole document, well, I've done it for you. I'll break it out in a way that seems logical and makes sense. And then as I'm doing that, I'll tie in some of the similarities between what they're proposing or what they're projecting to happen and what's actually already happening. So let's start with the scenario purpose. This is from their document. The following narrative comprises a futuristic scenario that illustrates communication dilemmas concerning medical countermeasures. They call that MCM, medical countermeasures, that could plausibly emerge in the not-so-distant future. Its purpose is to prompt users, both individually and in discussion with others, to imagine the dynamic and oftentimes conflicted circumstances in which communication around emergency MCM, medical countermeasures, development, distribution, and uptake takes place. Okay. While engaged with a rigorous simulated health emergency, scenario readers have the opportunity to mentally, quote, rehearse responses while also weighing the implications of their actions. At the same time, readers have a chance to consider what potential measures implemented in today's environment might avert comparable communication dilemmas or classes of dilemmas in the future. So, what this is really about. This is about two things. It's about the medical response to the pandemic and how they communicate this information to the general public. So this is the media's component of this sort of. It's the medical side / media side. So this is, we've got this pandemic. There's a lot of medical information around it. How do we get the medical information out to the general public to tell them what to do during this pandemic. Okay, so that is what they're ultimately talking about here. And so then I'll go through, let me go through this. This is the general purpose. This says, well, no, you know what? I'll skip that. What I'm going to do is I'll go down to the scenario timeline. And what this talks about is in this, you know, fake scenario that they've rolled out, they start it in 2025 in October. Okay. And it's going to run for 3 years in this scenario. Really, what we would probably want to do is just subtract 5 years from this number. Actually, you know what? Subtract about 5 years from the number. So instead of it being 2025, just imagine it's 2020, because it's really what it is. You know, you'll come to see when I go through this, you'll be like, holy shit, they're talking about now. But for the sake of keeping everything consistent with what they're talking about, I'm going to go off of their dates. Okay. So here we are, we're going to start in November of 2025. And I'm going to go through and just read some of the scenarios that they lay out during this timeline. Cases of SPARS. Now, SPARS sounds kind of like SARS. It's the virus. It's the COVID, you know? So cases of SPARS were reported across Minnesota and in 6 other states. Thanksgiving holiday travel and Black Friday shopping facilitated spread of SPARS beyond the Midwest. The WHO declared the SPARS pandemic to be a public health emergency of international concern. Next month, December 2025, no treatment or vaccine for SPARS existed, but there was some evidence that the antiviral Calosivir could be effective as a therapeutic. Sounds an awful lot like Remdesivir, right? But it's not. It's Calosivir. So, a proprietary vaccine developed and manufactured by a multinational livestock conglomerate was proposed as a potential foundation for a human vaccine. The vaccine was developed to combat an outbreak of a similar respiratory coronavirus in hoofed mammal populations in Southeast Asia, but the vaccine had not been licensed by any regulatory authority or tested in humans. There were concerns over potential. So, in this scenario, they're saying, we don't have a vaccine, but they're using a vaccine on animals that's kind of similar that they've been using to treat coronavirus in animals. So let's take a look at that. And maybe we can take this vaccine and we can jumpstart our development by piggybacking off of something that was made for horses. What could possibly go wrong with that, right? Okay, next month, January 2026. The U.S. government contracted SynBio to develop and produce a human SPARS vaccine based on the GMI animal vaccine. GMI is the company, the imaginary company in this scenario that made the animal vaccine. SynBio is the imaginary company that is going to make the human vaccine for this, okay? The Health and Human Services Secretary invoked the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, PREP Act, to provide liability protection for the vaccine manufacturer and providers. Congress authorized and appropriated emergency funds under the PREP Act to provide compensation for potential adverse side effects from the vaccine. Following reports of Calosivir's limited success in treating patients with severe SPARS infections, the FDA issued an emergency use authorization. Where have we heard that before? For the antiviral. Calosivir had been evaluated as a therapeutic for SARS and MERS, and several million doses were maintained by the SNS, which could be deployed as necessary while production capacity was established to meet demand. I'm not totally sure what the SNS is, but it's sort of like some sort of health regulatory agency or something like that. All right, couple months go by, we get into May of 2026. Production of Coronavac. Don't you love it? The SPARS vaccine produced by SynBio was well underway. Federal agencies initiated a communications campaign using well-known public figures with mixed results. Polls indicated a 15 to 23% increase in Spars and Colossevere knowledge nationwide. Hip-hop icon BZ, fake pretend rapper, just think Run-DMC, had success promoting public health messaging with an online video clip, but he lost credibility when he compared volunteers for Coronavax trials with volunteers from the Tuskegee syphilis study. The Tuskegee syphilis study is when they gave black people in Tuskegee, Alabama, syphilis. Didn't tell them, didn't treat them, just watched them die. That's what they did. So this imaginary fake rapper brought up Tuskegee and in this scenario and lost all credibility because everyone's like, oh yeah, that's right. They did use that to kill a bunch of black people in the past. So similarly, former President Bennett provided a non-committal response when asked if she would want Colossevere for her new grandson. So this President Bennett, this former President Bennett, served as the president from 2020 to 2024 in this scenario. Kind of like Kamala Harris, maybe. I'm just saying. Hang on a sec. Public health agencies discovered that a relatively new social media platform called Unequal, it's a fake one, was being used as a primary means of communication in college age populations. Okay. Next month, June 2026, Coronavax entered the final stage of its expedited review, and production capacity was increased. 10 million doses were expected to be available by July, with 50 million more in August. The CDC Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices announced vaccine priority groups. Healthcare providers were not included as a priority, inciting protests by doctors and nurses across the country. In order to prioritize distribution of limited Coronavax supply, the federal government requested that states report summary information for patient electronic health records to estimate the number of individuals in high-risk populations. This effort was met with resistance from the public, who protested the federal government accessing their private medical information. Next month, July 2026. You're not even going to believe this. Think Texas, by the way. A week prior to initiating the nationwide vaccination program, damage to a power grid in the Pacific Northwest resulted in a widespread power outage that lasted 2 weeks. State and local public health agencies initiated communications programs using posters and flyers to promote the vaccination program in the absence of electronic media. Social media efforts across the country promoted the vaccination campaign, and crowdsourced data helped to increase the efficiency in distributing the vaccine. Drop down 1 month, August 2026. The Coronavax vaccination program met resistance from several groups: alternative medicine proponents, Muslims. Remember that? They didn't want anything to do with pigs in the vaccine. African Americans and anti-vaccination activists. Initially operating independently, these groups banded together via social media to increase their influence. Now we'll skip down a couple months to November 2026. The anti-vaccine movement, formed in the wake of the 2015 measles outbreak in the United States, reignited their effort to combat the anti-vaccination supergroup. So ridiculous. The FDA, CDC, and other federal agencies also redoubled their communications efforts to promote the Coronavax campaign. An increasing number of post-SPARS pneumonia cases were reported across the country. Next month, December 2026, the nationwide vaccination program was expanded beyond the initial priority populations to include the rest of the country. Federal agencies initiated a vaccination communications program involving targeted online advertisements. Yeah, where have we seen that before? Two months later, February 2027. Post-SPARS pneumonia cases stressed inventories of antibiotics across the country. The Health and Human Services Secretary authorized distribution of the oldest lots of antibiotics from the SNS to supplement the antibiotic supply nationwide. test of antibiotics in the SNS inventory determined that 94% of the remaining antibiotics in the oldest lots maintained sufficient potency. You know, that 94% number is kind of interesting if you think about it, because when you read the initial media reports in, I think, August of 2020, that came out, they said 169,000 dead in the United States from coronavirus. Then if you read that, if you got to the bottom, the last paragraph, it says of the 100, you know, it says of the 169,000, only 6% actually died from coronavirus. The other 94% died with coronavirus, and on average, 2.6 other comorbidity conditions. So here we have that 94% coming out again. Seems a little fishy to me. I might be making something out of nothing, but it's something to keep your eye on. Continuing on this February 2027, tests conducted in August 2026 provided the basis for extending the expiration of these lots from 2027 to 2029. So they're talking about going into the vault that they had and getting these antibiotics. Some of them kind of expired, and they just go, let's just pretend the expiration date is an extra 2 years out instead. You know, so you can see the fuckery in action, even in the scenarios. They can't help themselves. You know, they have to keep doing crazy things. So we're now going to skip down to this falls under the recovery scenario timeline, but it's still more of the timeline. So we are in April 2027. Crowdsourced and independent epidemiology analysis of CoroVac side effects conflicted with official federal reports. The independent analysis gained popularity in traditional and social media due to visual presentation and interactive content. Government attempts to respond with data and press releases largely failed. So what that meant is, in the scenario, you start to see massive side effects, right? And some people on the internet, on social media, put together these really great presentations that are kind of hard to refute, and they're going viral. So it's giving the people the ability to just be like, to see this little report that they named this girl. It's like a blogger. It's like a female blogger, Epi something or other. I forget her name. And they use her as an example. She's doing such good work online in this scenario that she's making all these social media posts and doing this presentation that she's put together that is so effective at showing the side effects that it's making people not want to take the vaccine. And in this scenario, the government freaks out. They're like, we got to stop this chick from saying all this stuff. So that's what they're talking about here. Now we'll move down just 1 month, May 2027. Reports of CoroVac side effects begin to gain traction. Several parents of children who experienced neurological symptoms after receiving the vaccination sued the federal government and SynBio. The lawsuit was dropped when they learned of compensation funds available through the PrEP Act and the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Trust Fund. So they know, even in the simulation, that the vaccine has massive side effects and that people are going to start waking up and demand compensation. And they also didn't mention it in here, but you can't sue the vaccine makers through the 1986 vaccine, the law that was passed in 1986 in the United States, which indemnified the vaccine manufacturers from product liability lawsuits. So that's already in place. But then they did the additional step of making emergency authorization use. Emergency use authorization. And in the scenario, but also in real life, they did it now too. For all of these experimental rush to market vaccines like Moderna and Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer and AstraZeneca and all of them, they all have immunity because of this emergency use authorization clause that was activated both in real life and in this scenario. Gee, I wonder how they knew to do that, right? So the reports arose primarily from those in the initial priority slot, meaning high risk populations, and were few in number. With little available data and numerous pre-existing conditions, initial studies were unable to identify a statistically significant association with any long-term effects. Yeah, probably because they didn't study long-term effects. Claims for compensation were placed on indefinite hold until further data could be gathered and analysis completed. In response to public demand for long-term side effects compensation, the Health and Human Services Secretary invited Congress to conduct an independent investigation of the federal compensation process to alleviate concerns of impropriety. The public and media pressured Congress to increase the funds authorized for compensation under the PREP Act. So in their little scenario, they're getting hammered with vaccine side effects, so much so that there are so many people looking for money that the government and the meat that literally, like, the people in through the media make such a big uproar that the government has to go find additional money to pay, to basically pay these people off to shut them up. So then the whole scenario comes to an end in 2028. So that's when they say that everything winds up coming to a close. Then, so in this document, then they go on to something called communication dilemmas. These are the problems that they're facing with this. And so they hypothetically lay them out here as the sort of problems that they're going to face with explaining and communicating information about what you're experiencing with this pandemic, what is really happening behind the scenes with as far as drug manufacturing, you know, how fast we're making the vaccines, how we're going to distribute them. It goes into the sort of nudge campaigns to try and get people to take the vaccine and things like that. So they're role playing this out to simulate some of the problems that they're going to have with this. So this is listed under communication dilemmas. And I'm not going to go over all of them, but I will highlight a couple of them that seem to be a problem. So maintaining trust in government process for ensuring the timely development of safe and effective vaccines when novel threats arise. All right. So they're having problems convincing people to trust that the government's going to take care of this. Yeah, I wonder why. Next one, harmonizing inconsistent messaging across health agencies. Well, we saw this in 2020 with our own eyes, the inconsistent messaging from Fauci and Birx and all these people contradicting themselves. The CDC says one thing, Fauci says don't wear a mask, then he says you got to wear a mask, then he's seen at a Washington Nationals game not wearing a mask, then he says you got to wear two masks, and then he's not sure about masks, and then the CDC comes out and says 6 feet for social distancing, and they run that scam for 9 months, and then they finally say, well, for schools, we're going to change it to 3 feet, and everyone's going, what the fuck are you talking about? I mean, how about no feet? This is ridiculous. So they're having a problem with inconsistent messaging, probably because they're lying, but that's beside the point. Next one, appropriately tailoring public health messages to address the concerns and culture of specific communities. So in this scenario, it's not one size fits all for getting the vaccine message out. They mentioned that they try to scare the shit out of the Native Americans by saying, if you don't take this vaccine, you will die from SPARS. Then the elders in the tribe in this scenario came to them and said, you can't do it that way. You know, our culture, we're not obsessed with death, we're obsessed with living. So what you have to do is you have to reframe it and say, take this vaccine, therefore, and after you take this vaccine, you will have a long and healthy life. So they have to change the messaging because the messaging doesn't work for every cultural group. Likewise, with the Black community, they have to sort of address the Tuskegee thing because they're all talking about it and they all know about it. So it's the elephant in the room. So they decide, well, let's say, yes, there was Tuskegee and yes, that was terrible, but that's not us, and we don't do that stuff anymore. So they had to kind of try and get ahead of the curve, especially when their fictional rapper mentions that in the scenario. So the next one of their issues is responding to demand for an alternative antiviral drug not available in the United States. So we had something similar with that with hydrochloroquine. People wanted it. The government's like, no, you can't have it. Well, the reason why the government and the media, I mean, the government, media, big pharma wasn't pushing hydrochloroquine was because it's a generic and big pharma can't make any money off of it because, let's face it, they're a bunch of whores and the only thing they care about is money. They don't actually care about your health. That's established. If they cared about your health, they wouldn't all be convicted felons that have been busted for faking studies, bribing doctors, price fixing, fraud, conspiracy, you know, all those great things. So let's just come to an understanding, please, that the pharmaceutical industry's number one priority is making money. If in the process of making money, they accidentally improve your health, well, then that's a bonus, but not too much of a bonus because the money is in the middle. They don't want you dead. And they don't want you too healthy. They want you just sick enough that you keep coming back to them for their products. That's their business plan. It doesn't take a genius to figure that out. Okay, moving on. Next one. Responding to misinformation or doubt about a MCM generated by a prominent public figure. So they're talking about when famous people come forward and go, yeah, I'm not interested in the vaccine. I won't be taking that. I don't want anything to do with that. So in our real life scenario, who do we have? We have Novak Djokovic, a tennis player who came out and said, I'm not doing that. We have Del Bigtree, obviously has been anti-vax and he's well-known public figure. And someone like Wendy Williams, who was like, no, thank you. I'm not going to take the vaccine. So they're having problems with some celebrities thinking for themselves, you know, imagine that. Next issue. Maintaining public support after changing positions on MCM safety and efficacy. Well, they're experiencing that in real life here, and not in the scenario, in the simulation, but in reality. Public support is falling apart because they can't keep their story straight about what's going to happen with these drugs or what you need to do. You need to social distance. Oh, you need to, you know, do. I mean, people see through these inconsistencies. You know what they should have role played. What they should have role played in this scenario is, what do we do when governors of the states that have imposed massive lockdowns decide to go out and have dinner with their family and a bunch of friends without masks in restaurants that should very well be closed? So they didn't role play that, but they could have and maybe should have. Let's see. So then they go on to say one of the issues is providing real-time data on vaccine availability to align with supply and demand. They have an additional problem of meeting the information needs of citizens who come from diverse cultural, social, and demographic backgrounds and who may have a varying degree of trust in health authorities. Once again, they're talking about the black community that rightly knows that Big Pharma is trying to kill them. Supporting the current MCM, medical countermeasures, products in the face of opposition from a foreign regulatory agency. Well, we've seen this happen in Europe where they're saying different things than what the CDC is saying in the United States. And this inconsistency is a big problem. Also, Sweden did things differently. They didn't lock down. And the United States sees Sweden and all of us here go, yeah, we should have done that. But the authorities go, how dare Sweden do that? You know, that's the problem. They're the problem. They're screwing up this whole scam here. We got to get a hold on Sweden and Belarus for that matter. Last one here is responding to questions regarding safety and efficacy of drugs that have extended shelf lives. In the scenario, they're talking about these antibiotics that they basically repurposed, but it's not as big of a deal for us in real life as it is in this scenario. So they also want the people participating in this simulation to think about things, to think about some scenarios. They want them to think about how might federal health authorities avoid people possibly seeing an expedited SPARS vaccine development and testing process as somehow rushed and inherently flawed, even though that process still meets the same safety and efficacy standards as any other vaccine. Well, this is a scenario that is happening in real life. And by the way, that's a complete lie, saying that this process has still met the same safety and efficacy standards as any other vaccine. No, it has not. It absolutely has not. It's rushed to market. It hasn't cleared stage 3 trials on human beings. It's not approved. It hasn't passed the same process, safety process. So people feeling that this vaccine is somehow rushed, they're correct in that assessment. It is rushed. It is rushed in this scenario. It is rushed in real life. The reason why people are feeling that this vaccine may be rushed and inherently flawed is because it is rushed and inherently flawed. That's the reason why people feel this way. They're not making it up. They have good reason to think that. They go on to say, how might federal health authorities respond to critics who propose that liability protection for SPARS vaccine manufacturers jeopardizes individual freedom and well-being? Well, the reason why people think that product liability jeopardizes individuals' well-being is because it does. That's the reason they think it. So what they're running, what in this scenario, what they're telling people that are participating in it is, how do we get these people to stop using their brains? I mean, how do we respond to critics who propose that liability protection for SPARS vaccine manufacturers jeopardizes individuals' well-being? How do you respond to critics that say that? You tell them that they're correct in their assessment of this. Of course, that's not the answer they're going to give, but that's what's happened. That's what you should do. Moving on, once the vaccine becomes broadly available, how might public health communicators implement the best practices principle of enabling people to make their own informed decisions about whether to accept the novel SPARS vaccine? They're not allowing people to make their own informed decisions about this. They're pressuring people. That's what they're doing these days. They're not saying take it or leave it. They're saying take it or you can't go start this semester of college. They're saying take it or you can't work at your job anymore. That's not allowing people to make their own informed decision about whether or not to accept it. That's medical coercion. It's illegal. I doubt that they give a shit about that, but that's what it is. What are the potential consequences of health officials over reassuring the public about the potential risks of a novel SPARS vaccine when long-term effects are not yet known? Yeah, you think that's going to be a problem? How do we convince the public to not worry about the potential risks of this vaccine when we haven't done long-term studies yet? Oh, I don't know. Maybe do the long-term studies first. So what they're trying to role play here is, look, we're going to roll out a vaccine. We're not going to have long-term studies on it. How do we convince people to take it anyway? That's the scenario. You would be forgiven if you mistakenly thought I was talking about today, because this is the exact same thing that's happening today. They're having a hard time reassuring the public about potential risks of the vaccine when no long-term studies have been done. It's a problem they have in the scenario. It's a problem they have in real life. It's a problem they should have in real life. You can't reassure the public that everything is going to be fine long-term about the vaccine when you haven't done long-term studies. By the way, in this scenario, what happens in 9 months after the vaccine rolls out is that the people that take it start to develop symptoms that are aligned with mad cow disease. So they are correct in being concerned about the potential risks, the general public in this scenario, because later in the scenario, the vaccine gives everybody mad cow. They're trying to figure out in role play how to keep that hidden from the general public. What are we living through right now? The exact same thing. They're having difficulty managing this process because it's hard to manage this process when you're lying to people. There's massive confusion about the drug, okay, about the vaccines and things like that. Later, they talk about a new drug called VMAX, which basically is like hydrochloroquine. And let me get to the correct page for this, because they use little clips, little fake Twitter, fake tweets. They embedded in this document too. So you can see things like this says in this. It's a fake tweet, of course. But authorized today the use of VMAX antiviral for SPARS. Better safety profile than Colosevir. Equally effective. So they start talking about that. And they also mentioned that social media posts from the United Kingdom and several European countries alerted many individuals in the United States to the existence and purported benefits of VMAX. The authorization announcement was also distributed via all major American media outlets and quickly spread via social media. So once again, we're talking about this fake drug VMAX, which is hydrochloroquine. The word got out that there was another use for this than there was another drug out there that could fight this SPARS, kind of like people discovered that there was another drug out there that would be better for COVID. And so they try to suppress that, but it's kind of it doesn't really wind up working. So let's move on. Okay, here we go. I'm going to read this. This is from page 33 of this document. By May 2026, public interest in SPARS had begun to wane. In late April, the CDC had publicized an updated case fatality rate estimate suggesting that SPARS was only fatal in 0.6% of cases in the United States. Ooh, where have we heard that before? This figure matched public sentiment, widely expressed on social media, that SPARS was not as dangerous as initially thought. God, just think of this in terms of COVID. Fuck, it's the same thing. Okay. Combined with persisting doubts about Colosevir and the lack of a commercially available SPARS vaccine, the new lowercase fatality rate estimate led the public to grow increasingly hostile towards continued SPARS messaging. So people were in this scenario, people were over it. It wasn't killing as many people as they said it was going to kill. People recognized that. The numbers didn't add up, and the people were kind of over it. All right, same next paragraph. In order to overcome the public's disinterest, the CDC and FDA, in concert with other government agencies and their social media experts, began developing a new public health messaging campaign about SPARS, Colosevir, and the forthcoming vaccine Coronavac. The purpose of this campaign was to create a core set of messages that could be shared by all public health and government agencies over the next several months, during which time the SPARS vaccine would be introduced. Even though the disease was less fatal than initially thought, it remained expensive to treat in its severe form, and even mild cases had substantial impacts on economic productivity across the country. So in this scenario, they admit that the thing isn't that big of a deal, that the people realize that it's not a big deal. And so what do? They double down. They bring the CDC, the FDA, and other government agencies involved in conjunction with social media, and they start hammering out a new public health message campaign to get you scared in order to get you ready for the vaccine that's coming. Where have we heard that before? Oh, yes, the masks. The mask situation. This is playing out exactly like 2020. Public sentiment dropped off like in June 2020. Nobody was really that scared. Things were back, a lot of places back open. Think people were going in and out. Nobody was wearing a mask. Nobody was really that freaked out anymore. And then what do? they realized this. They knew the vaccine wasn't ready yet. It was still months away from development. And the vaccine is the end goal, by the way. So it's all about the vaccine. So they've got to keep the fear up. So what did they do in real life, 2020? They brought back the masks. What did they do in this scenario? They bring all of these agencies together and start the fear campaign. Next paragraph. In late May, three messages were approved by the cross-agency committee established to produce the messaging campaign. One addressing the nature and risks of SPARS, one regarding the effectiveness of Colossevir, and one about the anticipated release of Coronavac. These messages were broadly shared via all relevant government agencies, internet, and social media accounts. In an effort to further reach certain population subgroups, agency officials enlisted the help of well-known scientists, celebrities, and government officials to make short videos and clips, and in a few cases, give interviews to major media outlets. I'm going to keep going, but I have something to say about this. Among those chosen were former President Jacqueline Bennett, BZ, our fake rapper, a popular hip-hop star, and Paul Farmer, co-founder of Partners in Health and a renowned global health expert. Can anybody say Anthony Fauci? It's so exhausting, man, this whole thing. In the scenario, they tell you that as fear starts to fade and people recognize that this is all a bunch of bullshit, in order to keep people hanging on and scared until that rush-to-market vaccine can be made in the simulation, they bring in well-known scientists, celebrities, and government officials. What have we been seeing? Well-known scientists, Anthony Fauci, Bill Nye, the science guy, who, by the way, is an actor and a total dick, by the way. They bring in all the celebrities getting fake shots. Do you see the Anthony Hopkins video of him getting a fake shot? Some of his worst work, by the way, I would say. They're running the playbook on us. I'd like to remind you again, this document was put out in 2017. In the scenario, this BZ rapper guy uses, in when he tweets out, his hashtag is vaccines work. You want to take a wild guess what, when Run DMC did the cartoon, yo, get your vaccines, y'all. You know that, you know what the hashtag was? Vaccines work. Either we live in a cartoon or they're running the same play. I think that we are probably seeing a simulation gone live. There's too many similarities here for this to be some sort of accidental thing. I want to read something else. So now we're going to move on to a new section. So early on, this is from a chapter they call Lovers and Haters. Early on in the Coronavac vaccination campaign, anti-vaccination groups began emerging on social media platforms. These groups initially came from four primary sources: Muslim groups across the country who opposed the vaccine on the basis of the original formulation was used to treat pigs. By the way, in real life, who was standing up and saying, we don't want to take the vaccine because it was based on a formula made from pigs? Muslims. Just exactly like this scenario. African Americans who refused vaccination based on continued fear of governmental experimentation on African American populations. Right there, right to be afraid of that. alternative medicine proponents who had also been active in campaigning against Colossifer, and anti-vaccination activists who were galvanized by the anti-vaccination sentiment associated with the nationwide measles outbreak of 2015. By the way, 2015, nationwide measles outbreak? It wasn't measles outbreak. Some kids tested positive at Disneyland, and they used that as a justification to close down Disneyland and freaked people out. And they used that as the pretext to get the approval for SB 277 in California, which made mandatory vaccinations for all school age kids. By all accounts, the Disneyland thing was a psychological operation. So I wouldn't even believe. I don't believe that. I don't believe that that was a real thing. And right after that, by the way, on a personal note, that year we moved out of California specifically because of that. Not going to stick around and participate in that sort of forced insanity. All right. They go on to say that, Health and Human Services, including the CDC and FDA and other government agencies at the federal, state, and local levels, also renewed messaging efforts in support of CoroVax. The common message developed about CoroVax, originally used in early June, was re-released, and two additional messages were developed and distributed by mid-October, just before the vaccine was made available to the entire U.S. population. Paul Farmer, aka Tony Fauci, the renowned global health expert, provided the dialogue for the first of these, wherein he lauded the safety and efficacy of CoroVax and underscored the dangers of SPARS. His only regret, he said, was that the vaccine could not yet be made available to everyone on the planet. I think I recall Anthony Fauci saying something very similar. What a coincidence. It's almost like he's reading off a script. Probably because he is. In the second message, former President Bennett redeemed herself by televising her vaccination as well as the vaccination of two of her granddaughters. I assure you that in real life, when these are happening for these politicians and public official or celebrities and everything, they're getting either saline or in the Anthony Hopkins case, if you've seen that actor, Anthony Hopkins, who's seen getting a vaccine in his shoulder, he's sitting in a car and this nurse comes in. You can, if you watch the video, she squirts it out the window. You can watch it. It's on film. I mean, it's undeniable. They're faking it. So even in this scenario that they've invented, they put politicians on TV showing them getting vaccinated as a reason to keep everyone enthusiastic about wanting to take this. So they know, whether it's real life or fake scenario, that they're going to need to sell it. Now, it's something to me, my thought on this is, why the sales pitch? You know, is it the United States government's job to protect our health? The answer is no. It is not their job. Their job is to be the government. Their job is not to protect our health individually. If it was, we wouldn't have Cokes. We wouldn't have McDonald's. We wouldn't have Marlboros. We wouldn't have Budweiser. We wouldn't have any of those things, but we do. So their job is not to manage our health. It's our job. It's our responsibility. We're in charge of our own bodies. The unusual and insane push by the government to get everybody vaccinated ought to be crystal clear to you that it is not about health. It's about control. It's about telling you what you have to do. It's not about science. It is about compliance. That's what it is. The government is not in a position to tell you that the vaccines are safe and effective. Like they said in the scenario and like we see in real life, they haven't finished long-term studies. Therefore, they can't say that it's safe. yet corporations are going to mandate it for us? On what authority? In this fake scenario, Japan doesn't want the vaccine. They are waiting for another one to be made. They don't trust the vaccine coming from the United States in the scenario. Well, what are we seeing in real life? Same with Russia. Russia says, we'll make our own. We're not interested in your vaccine. Thanks very much. So there's vaccine hesitancy sometimes in countrywide. You know, the whole country sort of got on board with this. But they go on to say that later college students get mad and start protesting because the vaccine isn't available to the less fortunate. Get woke, go broke, right? See, even in this scenario, they know that the dopey college students are going to get out there and riot because they want countries like Haiti, Guatemala, and Cameroon to be able to get the vaccines too. Useful idiots, man. They don't even know what they don't know. But that's kind of what happens in college. You know, you're compassionate, you're young, you're idealistic. You think, oh, well, I'm going to go out there and save the world. This is so unfair. Let's make sure that the black and brown people, you know, get it first. You know, we need to save them too. Look, all good things. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not saying that wanting everybody to be healthy is a bad thing. It's not. The problem is the vaccine doesn't make you healthy. They don't know that yet. So they're out protesting in this scenario. Like, you got to give it to these countries. And then these globalists are like, oh, believe me, we will get to those countries soon enough. The vaccinations that they're going to get are going to be maybe a little bit different than the vaccinations everyone else gets, you know. And where have we seen that? World Health Organization. And who did they run? Who did they give their sterilants? You know, who did they... provide their sterilant tetanus vaccines? Well, you know, some of the same countries on this list. So we move on to something that is both dystopian and completely predictable. I'm going to read from this again. So to reach members of these groups, which, with the exception of the pocketed communities, were largely spread throughout the country, the U.S. government added a new aggressive advertising campaign to its pro-vaccination efforts. Imagine my surprise. The campaign provided targeted internet advertisements to individuals as they conducted web searches or visited anti-vaccination websites. If someone searched Google for Coronavac side effects, for example, a sidebar advertisement appeared on the results page explaining the benefits of the vaccine. Likewise, if someone wished to view the Colossevere vomiting video on YouTube, apparently in this scenario there's a video of a kid who takes this Colossevere drug and starts projectile vomiting, and people saw this video and they go, oh, no, thank you. I don't want to take that drug. So in this scenario, they have to counter that because it was so effective at freaking people out. So in this, they say, likewise, if someone wished to view the Colossevere vomiting video on YouTube, they would first have to watch either a montage of pictures illustrating the effects of SPARS or a clip of Paul Farmer, aka Anthony Fauci, explaining the Coronavac benefits. In their scenario, they use Google and YouTube. This is not accidental. I'll continue. This advertisement campaign required government officials to leverage relationships in the information technology industry, including the many companies involved with social media. But the impact was worth the effort. Vaccination rates eventually began increasing across all targeted demographics except the most recalcitrant anti-vaccine activists. Holy shit. In their scenario, they say that they will use Google to run pro-vaccination ads alongside when you're looking up anti-vaccination sites. They will run pro-vaccination ads if you want to look up side effects as a search term. If you want to watch the video of the little girl throwing up from taking the Colossevir medicine, before you can watch that video, you get indoctrinated and propagandized to about through an advertising campaign that makes you watch a montage of pictures illustrating the effects of SPARS, meaning before you see that video, we need to try and sell you that this is actually a real dangerous thing. Or you have to watch a clip of Paul Farmer, otherwise known as Tony Fauci, explaining to you all the benefits of the vaccine. They then go on to say that this advertising campaign leveraged their relationships with information technology industry, social media. What have we seen in 2020 and 2021? Social media falling in line behind the government, behind the CDC, removing any posts that are anti-vaccination, removing people from their platforms, kicking people off completely that aren't complying with the pro-vaccine agenda. This isn't an accident. This isn't a bug. It's a feature. We're being lied to on a massive scale here. They have planned this out. They know exactly what we will do. They know exactly how to counter it. It's terrifying. Let's go a little bit further. As time passed and more people across the United States were vaccinated, claims of adverse side effects began to emerge. Several parents claimed that their children were experiencing neurological symptoms similar to those seen among livestock exposed to the GMI vaccine. That is the vaccine where we started. It was the one that was being used on animals that they said, well, let's use this as the basis to build the vaccine for humans off of the work you've already done with this vaccine for animals. And what they're saying in this scenario is that after a couple of months go by, parents are saying, my kids are experiencing side effects, and those side effects are matching identically the side effects of the vaccine on those animals that the animals had. And you want to know what the side effects was? Well, let's get to that. By May 2027, parental anxiety around this claim had intensified to the point of lawsuits. That month, a group of parents whose children developed mental retardation as a result of encephalitis in the wake of Coronavac vaccination sued the federal government, demanding removal of the liability shield protecting the pharmaceutical companies responsible for developing and manufacturing Coronavac. They got mad cow in the scenario. The kids got it. The same way the animals got it. I'll continue. The growing plaintiff cohort quickly withdrew their suit upon learning that the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Trust Fund and an emergency appropriation of funds authorized by Congress under the PREP Act existed to provide financial reimbursements to those that were adversely affected by the Coronavac vaccine in order to cover health care costs and other related expenses. So what they're saying is all these parents got together and sued the government, and then the government said, you can't sue us for this. But what we do have is we have this pool of money over here, this National Vaccine Injury Compensation Trust Fund, kind of like VAERS, exactly like VAERS, probably. And that they had this other batch of funds authorized by the PREP Act that they could dig into. They're saying all these parents sued the government, but then dropped the suit against them, not because there wasn't anything to it, but because the money that they wanted was somewhere else. So they had to get it from somewhere else. given the positive reaction to the federal government's response and the fact that the majority of U.S. citizens willing to be vaccinated had already been immunized, the negative publicity surrounding adverse reactions had little effect on nationwide vaccination rates. Yeah, because everyone was already vaccinated at that point. That's why they want everybody in now, fast, immediately, because when the adverse side effects show up 9 months later, it'll destroy anybody, you know, it'll destroy the will of anybody to want to get vaccinated. But what they said in this scenario is that once all these mothers came forward and started saying, my kids have all these side effects, it really had little impact on the vaccination rate because everyone had already been vaccinated. There was no one left to say, no, thank you, I don't want it. They'd already been corralled in and forced, not forced into it, but they'd already gotten it in the months earlier. So in our real life scenario, we're not quite to this point yet. We're still a couple months before this point. This point hits us in September of 2021. So if we get to September 2021, and we start to see a bunch of adverse side effects, including mental retardation and mad cow disease, you'll know what this, it'll trigger some, you'll go, holy shit. I was listening to Macroaggressions and we were talking about this stuff. The focus, this back to the report, the focus on adverse side effects, however, resulted in a considerable increase in the number of compensation claims filed, and many grew concerned about the long-term effects of Coravax, that Coravax could have on their health. This concern was particularly high among some African-American parents who continued to question the government's motives regarding the Coravax vaccination campaign. Yeah. They're questioning the motives because there's motives to be questioned. While the FDA, CDC, and other agencies were busy researching possible connections between Coravax and the reported neurological side effects, their efforts were continually undermined by epidemiological analysis produced by various non-governmental individuals and groups. A popular science blogger, EpiGirl, this is who I was talking about earlier, the fake girl who is a blogger, began posting interactive maps of the incidence of Coravax side effects in April 2027. To create the maps, EpiGirl collected anecdotes of adverse Coravax side effects using Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, and combine them with data downloads from Health and Human Services Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS. She went to VAERS, pulled the number of adverse effects, started making graphs and charts, put it out on YouTube, and got super popular. I mean, there are a lot of people doing that right now. EpiGirl also encouraged those among her subscribers who were Apple product users to share health data with her via Apple's Research Kit and Health Kit applications. EpiGirl's maps were consequently shared widely in social media circles and even included in local and national news reports. Let's get to the end. Let's wrap this shit up, shall we? It's really horrifying. But I think it's important for us to get into this. So as the pandemic tapered off, several influential politicians and agency representatives came under fire for sensationalizing the severity of the event for perceived political gain. Gretchen Whitmer, that American psycho, Gavin Newsom running California, the maniac Cuomo, you get the picture, right? As with many public health interventions, successful efforts to reduce the impact of the pandemic created the illusion that the event was not nearly as serious as experts suggested it would be. Oh, yeah, right. President Archer's detractors in the Republican Party seized the opportunity to publicly disparage the president and his administration's response to the pandemic, urging voters to select a strong leader with the best interests of the American people at heart. Democratic president there, fucking everything up, and the people aren't happy. A widespread social media movement led primarily by outspoken parents of affected children, coupled with widespread distrust of Big Pharma, supported the narrative that the development of the SPARS MCM medical countermeasures, so this was unnecessary and driven by a few profit-seeking individuals. Conspiracy theories also proliferated across social media, suggesting that the virus had been purposely created and introduced to the population by drug companies, or, you're not even going to believe this, that it had escaped from a government lab secretly testing bioweapons. You mean like Wuhan? After action reports, government hearings, and agency reviews following the pandemic were too numerous to count. Emergency funding appropriated by Congress to fight the disease became available partway through the course of the pandemic, but federal, state, and local public health agencies struggled to manage the procedural requirements to spend it. As a result, significant amount of emergency funds remained unused as the pandemic wound down. As the investigation grew in intensity, several high-ranking officials at the CDC and FDA were forced to step down and withdraw from government in order to, quote, spend more time with their families. Little desire remained on the part of decision makers or those who served in the trenches during the response to rehash events of the past several years. Yeah, that's what they always say. I'm looking forward. Let's leave the past behind us. No repercussions for everybody. I don't want to live in the past. Let's look beyond that. Meaning no accountability. The COVID narrative is a false narrative. It was role played 3 years earlier with the SPARS, with this SPARS document right here that was run by Johns Hopkins Medical Center. It was then role-played a second time in 2019 at Event 201 in late October. Once again, Johns Hopkins involved in that, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and the World Economic Forum. And then 6 months later, it was rolled out across the United States and the rest of the world as a gigantic fake pandemic. Not as severe as they said it would be, destroying everything in its wake financially, socially, mentally. And they act as though they had no idea that something like this was possible. Yet here they are, role-playing it down to this minute details, Fauci's and all of this. We haven't reached the end in terms of this scenario yet. Where we stand right now, we still have about 4 or 5 more months to go before we get to the part in the simulation where the vaccine adverse side effects start to really kick in. I hope that doesn't happen. I don't want to see people get hurt. I'm not rooting for that. But knowing what I know about the vaccine industry on its best day, when they've had 10 years to test out a vaccine, it's still dangerous to some people. What do you think is going to happen with an experimental rush to market mRNA gene editing, gene therapy device that opens that uploads an operating system into your body? Not my words, the CEO of Moderna's words. And Moderna should know, they've never made a vaccine. They're a gene therapy company. What do you think that's going to do to people?
Do you think it's going to give him encephalitis? You think it's going to give him mad cow disease? You think it's going to give him something that mimics that? Man, I hope it doesn't. I really hope it doesn't. I really hope that best case scenario is that all those vaccines or most of those vaccines were filled with saline, but they weren't, you know, because we've got people dropping dead from them. We've got people showing massive side effects. You can go to VAERS and see it for yourself. But I would caution you getting too married to the numbers that you see on VAERS because they're inaccurate. You need to multiply those numbers by 100 because they say that on average, only 1% of the side effects are ever reported to VAERS. Most people don't even know it exists, let alone are they taking the time to actually report their side effects. Some of the people are dead and cannot report their side effects. You know what I mean? So we've got a couple months to see how this plays out. I am on the side of humanity. I want people to be healthy. I want people to be alive. I do not want the world depopulated. That does not sound like something that I would have any interest in, especially when the maniacs that are running the show are the ones in charge of it, because they're getting rid of the wrong people. If they want to do humanity a favor and save this planet, they would depopulate themselves. But I'm certainly not going to hold my breath on that. Look, if you guys want to read this document in its entirety, I'm going to put the link in the description. I encourage you to take a look. I'm not trying to scare people with this. I know it is scary. My intention isn't to scare you. My intention is to draw the parallels between what we have seen in real life in 2020 and currently in 2021 and compare that with the quote fake scenario that they developed that they said would roll out in 2025 through 2028. We haven't made it 3 years through our own version of this. So we don't know if what we're experiencing will match what they've written about in the SPARS document. But it certainly does seem like we are on a parallel track to that. And it seems possible, or maybe even very likely, that we'll wind up in a situation with massive side effects, government agents being forced to step down, huge lawsuits, and a bunch of sick people. I hope that doesn't happen. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. Please take the additional step of sharing the show with people that you think might want to know about this. If you have not taken the vaccine yet, it is your duty and obligation to yourself to get educated on it. Nobody's going to do that work for you. Don't take anything that I say and trust it in just because I'm saying it. Please research it for yourself. It's much more real when you do the work yourself. I'll give you the information to get you started. I'll put you on one path towards it. But please do not just take anything that I say or any of the other people out there that are talking about this as the gospel. You need to get in and take a look at it on your own time and make sure that you're seeing the same things I'm seeing. Because what I'm seeing looks really bad. I hope it's not. I hope we're all safe coming out the other end of this. But I'll tell you what, I don't trust the government. I don't trust the pharmaceutical industry. I don't trust the media. And I don't trust big tech. And those are the four industries that are running this operation. Not the ones you want to bet your life on. And that is, in fact, what you're doing right now. You are betting your life that those institutions are telling you the truth. And unfortunately, they have a very long history of lying to you. Take care, everybody. I will talk to you soon.